Rebecca.
And I'm Krabeshni.
And welcome to Building with Builders.
Our podcast where we believe that building is fun.
Super fun.
So much fun.
Build Her Collective was created to help women with building and renovating. And we believe that with the right tools, everyone can build. For us, it's all about encouraging women to take back control of the building process and really achieve their dreams.
We are women in the building industry, and as developers, builders, and project managers, it's our passion to share everything we know with other women doing the same. And that's why we've created this podcast for you.
So if you love all things building,
you're into design,
keen on the numbers,
about to renovate,
thinking and dreaming of that forever home and what it would look like,
or even developing for profit,
then you've found your family.
Subscribe to our podcast and follow our journey over at buildhercollective.com.au.
Hello, lovely listeners. Today I'm talking to Simone Schenkel from Gruen Eco Design, and she's here to share with us some tips and tricks and things to know when designing a passive house home. Now, there's lots of information on the internet about sustainability and about passive house, and it's kind of confusing. So hopefully Simone is going to shed some light in terms of what to look out for, what to know about, where things might cost, and tell us a little bit about some of the projects that she's working on at the moment. So Simone, thank you so much for being here with us.
Thanks a lot for having me. I've been following you quietly in the background a lot, so it's an honor to be here.
Now, why don't we kick off with learning a little bit about your journey and what led you to become a certified passive house designer and a building designer to this point today?
Yeah, so maybe I have really to go back a long, long time. So when I was a child, my mom used to watch nature documentaries all the time, and I just grew up loving nature and animals, and I never could quite understand how someone could harm our mother nature. That's kind of how I grew up. And then I started studying architecture in Germany, and a lot of our education was based around energy efficient, sustainable design. And then when I came to Australia in 2007, I remember people first told me, you don't need double glazing or you don't need insulation. And I think I believed it for 1 or 2 weeks until I started to freeze half to death in our first apartment. And that's when I realized, okay, something is quite wrong here. And I started to go to some talks in the city about the newest in energy efficient sustainable design. And I just thought, hold on, that's what I learned at uni. And that's when I kind of started to realize, okay, my education was actually different to what most people learn here. And back then I was really lucky. My boss back then, he kind of loved everything German, everything efficient. And then he started to support me and to promote energy efficient, sustainable design. And we started to promote the German way of building. So, you know, how the Germans do it, which is quite different to here. And so, yeah, that's how it all started. And after that, I changed to a building design practice that was only doing energy efficient, sustainable design, which was amazing because I learned all the basics and principles about, you know, passive solar, how it works in Australia, which is a bit different to how it is in the Northern Hemisphere. Yeah, and I really learned a lot about, you know, all the materials and products here. Then, yeah, 2014, I ventured out on my own. Back at that time, I was already quite interested in passive house. It was just starting to become a thing in Australia, that there weren't that many things just yet. And back then, before COVID, everything had to be done in person. And the passive house designer course is a 2-week course where you actually have to be present for 2 weeks. So obviously with little kids, that was not possible. But then finally in 17, I did the course. And wow, it was a mind-boggling. I mean, I knew the basics before about passive house, and, you know, we're going to talk about it more shortly. But from that time on, I just could not go back. It's almost like once you know, you can't unknow.
Yeah.
And I can't offer anything else, or I can't do anything else. Yeah, from that moment, passive house all the way.
So you specialize particularly in passive house, but you're also a building designer. So does that mean that when a client comes to you, you can kind of fully document like from start to finish? Do you want to just talk through that process a little bit on how you could design a property to have passive house principles? And they're not having to work with someone else as well and translate all of that information.
Yeah. So we do the whole lot. You know, sometimes we do just small renovation extension projects where people just want to retrofit their homes. Yeah. Extensions, new build, townhouses, pretty much everything residential. And I'm a big believer that no matter how much money you have, you can always make your home more energy efficient and sustainable. And I know, you know, budget can be restrictive and not everyone can go the whole way. But it doesn't matter. We help them to go as far as they can within their budget. Because I think as well, it's not sustainable either if you stretch your your mortgage to the max and you're just a slave of your mortgage. So sometimes there has to have to be some compromises. But having said that, there are quite a lot of things you can incorporate and quite a lot of the passive house principles to make sure your house actually performs well and to save on your bills and, you know, give you thermal comfort and a healthy home.
So this is a topic that I'm pretty passionate about. I'm a building scientist. So I did my degree, in the early 2000s, and I was a qualified building scientist. And, you know, at the time, it wasn't really a very well-known thing. So we learned sustainability. We learned about, you know, how to use sustainable materials, the principles of sustainability. But I also did project management, and I ended up going more into a project management background or a job. But a lot of my girlfriends actually, and I had four friends that were female that were in uni with me. We were the only four out of the class of 45. I actually had a fantastic experience. Those four women, I have to say, we've all done completely different things. So one of them continued on with building sciences. So she's now a fire specialist. Another one actually, she did a lot of work with the building code, and she's working over in the UK now. And I think she's doing amazing things in terms of the science behind the regulations. Another one is a sustainable scientist, and she's also well certified, and she works at a big commercial corporation in the city doing design. And so it's really interesting because I was just reflecting on this because Simone and I actually had a catch up last week, and we've both been reflecting on our very fun conversation that we had. And I thought, hey, actually, that's a really important thing to share with women who are listening, that just because you have a specialty or you do a degree in a certain area doesn't mean that you can't specialize in a niche area. And there are so many jobs in the building industry that women naturally lean to. Don't forget that. There's probably just something that you haven't heard of yet that really sparks you. And I think it would be fun, being a building scientist myself, I think it would be fun to talk about some myths. Let's debunk a few myths. So one of the myths that I think comes up a lot is that if someone thinks if they want to have a sustainable home, it's not going to be pretty.
Yes, we hear that a lot. And we often get the question as well, what is your style? Or, you know, how do your houses look? And I must say, we don't have a certain style as such, because I think no matter if you are after a Hampton style home, an ultra modern eco shack, or even a French provincial, every house can be highly energy efficient. For us, it's more a matter of having a smart design. And by that, I mean less is more. So quality over quantity, and coming up with smart design solutions, you know, rather than just having everything huge, you know, reduce unnecessary corridors and circulation space. Try to come up with smart solution, multifunctional spaces, having the windows in the right locations, maybe waked ceilings or highlight windows and things like that. So you can create phenomenal spaces without going huge. And it's really a matter of being smart with your selections. Not everything in the house potentially can be a feature. And by that, I mean, you know, often a lot of the build money goes to custom-made items, you know, custom-made joinery, custom-made claddings, curved walls, corner windows. And yes, if you want to build highly energy efficient, the windows do cost more, and, you know, some of the other elements cost a bit more. However, I think that if you can build a custom designed home, you can actually afford a passive house or a highly energy efficient home. It might just be a bit of a matter of shifting priorities. Rather than having the natural stone bench top, maybe you go for something a little bit more cost effective.
Now, the thing to think about is, why is that myth around? And it's actually part truth, but it's also not quite right, because the building technologies and materials that we have today have changed so much in the last 10 to 15 years. And I think even 20 years ago, when someone was building something that was sustainable, you know, yeah, it was a bit utilitarian. They didn't have high ceilings because they didn't want to overheat or overcool. The cost of glazing was more costly because people weren't buying as much. But as consumers and as clients, we drive the brief of our home, and we can drive the market changes and adaptation. So if enough people are asking for products in the economy, there will be a solution to that demand. So keep that in mind. We are all doing our bit. And like Simone says, we can all do our bit to be as sustainable as we can afford and as sustainable as we can be, because we are building for the next 50 to 80 years. So think about that. There's a lot more composite materials on the market today than there used to be. Glazing is way completely different, but also furniture and buying things that are more eco-produced is much more mainstream. I think another myth that I'd love you to debunk is that if you have a passive house, you can't open the windows.
Yeah, I think that that's the biggest one where people kind of freak out, but it's actually the opposite. You can open the windows as much as you want. You just don't have to anymore. And the reality is, it's a really good example that lots of people don't know how much humidity we actually produce. For instance, a three-person household can produce up to 8 liters of water a day. And that's with showering, cooking, breathing, just being in the house. And the problem is this water can form in areas in your house. You can get mold behind a robe or a cabinet or in the bathroom. You know, many people have that happening. And typically, even though the Australian homes are really leaky, you just can't get all that humidity out. And so in theory, you would need to do a proper cross ventilation 2 or 3 times a day. And by that, I don't mean just opening an awning window. I mean opening windows or doors on opposite sides of the house for 10 or 15 minutes. And to be honest, whoever does that? You know, if it's 10 degrees outside or if it's 40 degrees outside, no one would ever do it. And mold can be a sneaky thing because typically you don't see it straight away. It happens over years. It builds up over years, and often it can build up in walls in areas where you can't see it. And people wonder, why are we getting sick? Why do we constantly have a cold? Why do our kids get asthma? So there are all those things that people often just don't know. And the beauty is with the passive house that this just can't happen. We're going to talk a little about the principles more soon, but the system is set up in a way that mechanical heat ventilation creates a constant cross ventilation, making sure there's always fresh air in the house, not too much humidity, without creating a draft, which is also important.
Now let's jump into those. So what are the passive house principles?
Yes. So one thing as well is I should say it's really not rocket science, because a lot of people are really scared about it. And I know especially a lot of people in the industry, like some designers, architects or builders, they get quite aggressive or antsy when you talk about passive house, but it's really just building science. So it goes all back to highly energy efficient insulation, making sure you really have no drafts. It's really like your woolly jumper, you know, keeping you warm, high performing windows with thermal breaks, making sure that the heat can't travel in or out of the house. You also have the mechanical ventilation, heat recovery system that filters incoming air as well. So you have constant, fresh, healthy air, no pollens, no mold, less dust mites as well. And also the avoidance of thermal bridges. Thermal bridges, interestingly, is a thing that is not talked about in Australia at all, pretty much, when you study architecture. But what it is, you have to imagine it almost like thermal highways. So each time a material like steel or even concrete connects the inside environment with the outside environment, it creates like a thermal highway where heat or cold can just travel in. And not only does that create cold drafts or overheats your house in summer, those elements can lead to moisture buildup and, you know, then ultimately can lead to mold or even structural damage. And I think I mentioned before that the German climate is just less forgiving. Reason being, you might have minus 20 degrees outside and plus 20 inside. And then if you have in your wall a point where water could build, that could actually freeze. And if water freezes inside your structure, your wall could be damaged and your house could collapse on you, so people could die. So it's really a thing. You can't overlook thermal bridges or those kind of things. So therefore, in Europe or Germany or all the northern countries, it's a big thing and it's, you know, factored into all the construction, all the details. Versus here in Australia, if you don't look at the thermal bridge, it gets a bit drafty and you might get mold 5 years down the track. So who cares, you know, to say it in a really bad way. But a sad thing is as well that most people just don't know about this. And, you know, it's not that builders or people want to give you a bad house. It's just an educational thing. They often just don't understand the implications of thermal bridges or how important it is to get an airtight house. Because airtightness is then the last part of the picture. You really have to make sure that heat can't come into the house uncontrolled, or, you know, you don't want the uncontrolled ventilation. You want to make sure that everything in the house is, you know, just what you want.
So let's talk about that one a little bit more. I suppose in terms of this mechanical system, do you feel like the passive house homes are very pressurized, or how do they feel?
They feel amazing. So if you ever have a chance to step into a passive house, and you know that there will be a few again, there is open passive house day, I think in June and November, and there will be several open on the sustainable house day, which is in October. They feel really different. For once, they're really calm and quiet because the air is staying out. The soundproofing is phenomenal. So actually, a lot of people in big cities, or if you're on busy road, they go for passive house, not because of the performance or because they want to save the environment, just because they don't want to hear the busy street. That's another side effect. But when it comes to the ventilation, it's again, it's not rocket science, but it's a fairly intricate system. So for once, the passive house calculations will determine exactly how much air intake or how much exhaust you need. And the whole system will be calculated in a way that there is a constant pressure so that everything is set up in a perfect way. So you definitely, it has to be set up by someone who knows what they're doing. And you won't feel under pressure or anything.
Now, you spoke earlier about thermally broken windows, and I would kind of consider those to be the Rolls Royce of windows that we can get here in Australia. But I think that some people might not actually understand what that means. Do you want to explain a little bit around what a thermally broken window frame is?
Yes. So again, that goes back to the thermal bridges and the thermal highway. So I know Australia loves the aluminium windows, and they're all good and nice for them because they last forever. But the problem is aluminium is the worst conductor in the world. So that means even if you would have the best double glazed window with aluminium frames, they perform really poorly. A standard double glazed aluminium window performs as badly as a single glazed timber window. But most people just think, oh, I have double glazed windows. But double glazing is not equal double glazing. So the importance is if you have aluminium windows, there needs to be a break in between. So you need some insulation layer in between the aluminium that stops the heat going from the inside outside or vice versa. Timber windows are kind of naturally thermally broken because the heat can't travel through the timber. And similar thing happens with UPVC windows, kind of. Most of the windows that we use are UPVC windows, either from overseas or where the frames are manufactured overseas or according to the European standard. And they really don't look like plastic. And in my opinion, if you want to build a highly energy efficient house, often the UPVC windows are the most cost effective option. They usually cost quite a lot less than the timber windows or the thermally broken aluminium windows, or the ones that most people love and that look amazing is the composite windows, where you have the timber on the inside and the aluminium on the outside. They're absolutely beautiful. They are amazing. But still, like you said before, you know, it's all economy of scale. So the prices have come down so much. Like 10 years ago, 11, when we renovated our own house, there weren't that many options, or they were really expensive. So we actually imported windows from Germany back then. But nowadays, you get so many options. And like I mentioned before, either companies that import the windows from Europe or the US, or that manufacture the windows here. And like a few years ago, you would have needed over $100,000 to get triple glazing for a house. And now, if you plan it smartly, you can save between $40,000 or $50,000.
Which on the grand scale of an investment, if you're looking to build new, then, you know, that's actually not that much. It's marginally 10%, give or take, depending on what your budget is and how big a house you're building.
Exactly.
So I think that's all just really interesting. And I think what it tells me is that there are more people out there who are wanting to build sustainably, who are eco-minded. With passive house principles, does it consider solar panels, water tanks, recycling water on site, all those sorts of other things?
Not so much. So the passive house standard itself is really fabric first approach. So it really just looks at the performance of the house. However, within the calculations, you look at your energy consumption. So you have to put in whatever, all the light fittings you have, all the appliances, your washing machine, everything gets put in and gets considered. And a passive house, there is kind of the passive house standard, but you can also go up to passive house premium. So you actually get extra points when you're off the grid or when you're fully self-sustained. So you get a special plaque then. So, you know, it kind of is considered, but it doesn't look into recycling materials or life cycle assessment, which is one thing sometimes people question about the passive house standard, or, you know, asking, you know, it could go more. But yeah, that's probably something for the future. And I think they might be looking at it, but it's not quite in it yet.
But yet again, if you decide that you want to build a passive house, and this is the type of stuff that we talk about in our Q&As, it doesn't mean that you can't include solar panels. It doesn't mean that you can't recycle water from your roof and use it to flush toilets. It doesn't mean you can't plant edible gardens in your gardens, because you can choose how much you want to include. And I think people don't realize the opportunity that they really have. Speaking of which, everyone is worried about how much it's going to cost to build a passive house. And I know that you can't talk specifically about numbers, but what I thought would be really interesting would be to look at what are some of the budgets of some of the projects that you're working on right now, and where do you think a passive house might sit within in terms of a budget range or a square meter range?
It's a really difficult question, like we talked about last week. How long is a piece of string? let's say it really depends as well on who you talk with in the industry and where you're building. So for instance, if you build in Sydney, that's much more expensive than building in Victoria. Again, if you're inner city, it's a different thing than building countryside or Western Australia, Adelaide, it's all different. But let's say here in Melbourne, most people or builders would say you need between $4,000 or $4,500 per square meter to do a passive house. Some people even say you can't build it for less than $5,000. Having said that, we have a few projects that sit currently between the $3,200 to $3,500 per square meter. But what we find as well is that if the houses get a little bit larger, then the square meter weight comes a little bit down because there are some one-off costs, you know, that cost a bit more. But the bigger the scale of the house, you know, the more the square meter, the lower the cost comes down. I would say as a generic rule, you know, if you have a typical four-bedroom house or something like that with two living areas or extra study, then probably on the safe side, you would be somewhere between $700,000 and $900,000. Just to give a real rough budget, we have a few projects that are aiming for less, but then they're either quite compact homes or where people do owner builder. So we have quite a few projects as well where we help the clients to come up with a really high energy efficient shell, you know, either fully prefabricated or semi prefabricated, where we get a builder to get the house up to lockup stage and then they take over in order to save money. But it's not an easy journey. There's a lot of things involved in that. And it's not for everyone.
That's very true. Having a prefabricated option, does that bring the cost down at all? Or is that roughly the same rate as building?
It depends. In some cases, the prefabrication actually can cost more. It depends a bit wherever you're flexible with your design and you can follow their standard sizes or dimensions. So if you're on a countryside block, that might work well. But often when you're in a city, you might be so restrictive with setbacks or planning regulations that you can't follow those rules. Or if you have a set idea about ceiling height. So we just had a project where the clients wanted, I think, 3.3 meter ceiling heights and the standard panels just don't come in the sizes. So that was a premium. So things to take a bit into account as well. But the one thing though is that, you know, building a passive house, especially if you haven't done it before, can be quite challenging and daunting as a builder. And so what we find is if you go with a prefabricated or semi-prefabricated system, there is less room for error. So it's a little bit easier for someone who hasn't done it before, but it does typically cost a bit more as well. Versus if a builder has done several homes, they might be confident just with going with a stud build and just wrapping it all and getting it airtight. But in all the projects that we're looking at, typically, if you build the house with a 140 mil stud wall, it needs to be 140 mil because you have to fit in a bit more insulation than into the typical Australian home has. And that seems to be the most cost-effective solution, but it requires quite a bit of involvement from the builder.
Well, I think that's a lot of information to take in, but let's just do a quick recap. So Passive House Principles is all about orientation, ventilation, air tightness, and reducing heat gain and heat loss.
Yeah, that's something actually that I haven't mentioned is one thing what we do regardless wherever someone wants a passive house or not, we always design our homes following the passive solar design principles. Because, you know, why wouldn't you use the sun's free energy? You know, why wouldn't you make use of the things that are there anyway? So we do that regardless. And like I said before, we try to get the houses as airtight and highly energy efficient as we can. But one thing that's really important, even if you were not to go the whole way of passive house, as soon as you start looking at an airtight building, you need some kind of ventilation. Like I mentioned before, you just can't open the windows long enough. Even with our project that don't go for certification, we put in a mechanical heat recovery ventilation unit. Or if budget is tight, we might not go for the high spec one, not for the passive house ones, but we still put in some sort of ventilation because, yeah, like I said before, you definitely don't want to get into the trap that you suddenly create an unhealthy home that makes you sick.
Sick building syndrome, that's a whole other topic.
Yes. But one thing as well, what I haven't mentioned yet, one of the biggest reasons why I love passive house, and that goes back to the actual energy ratings or how typically homes are done in Australia. And I guess most of the listeners will be familiar with the energy rating and the 6-star requirements. And that's all good and nice. But sadly, how it's done in Australia, it's really just a theoretical rating. So that means the rating is just on paper. And even if you have a 6, 7, or 8-star home, you have no guarantee how the house is actually built because sadly there are no quality assurances or checks in place. And even though in theory, the builder should put in the insulation properly, no one is checking it. So neither the builder nor designer, architect, building surveyor, no one. So what house you get at the end can sometimes be a bit of a lottery, wherever you have a builder who knows what they're doing or not. And a lot of the so-called 8 or 9-star homes have actually been tested and rather performed like 2 or 3-star homes. On the other hand, with the passive house standard, you have a complete control and guarantee what you design is what you're getting. What that means is for once there are the passive house calculations, and it's a really intricate calculation system where you put everything into the program from, you know, every single material, every appliance you put in, you know, you do sun studies, you calculate thermal bridges, because even in a thermal bridge-free house, you have some screws that go through the wall or some other metal elements. So everything gets calculated. The second thing is your builder has the quality assurance because he has to build the house to a certain airtightness level, which gets tested. And if it doesn't comply, you can try and go and find the leakage in the house. And then the next thing is, which is why I also am a big fan of the certification. If you go for the certification, you have an independent certifier scrutinizing everything. And by that, I mean that the certifier for one scrutinizes the calculations. Because, you know, often here in Australia, people might not have done that many passive houses. You know, it might be their first passive house or, you know, the third or second. So they might maybe just do some errors. So the certifier will pinpoint them and find them. The certifier will also scrutinize all drawings and details to check that everything is done fine. And also the builder has to do a photo documentary, and almost like a photo love story, where they to do photos of every single detail to prove that it's done like on the plans. And so the certifier scrutinizes all the details, everything is applied, and then checks that everything has really been done as per the documentation. And the interesting thing is that, you know, I think one of the first passive house projects was done in 1990. Not sure if it was apartments or townhouses, something like that. And they still perform exactly like per the calculations because they're getting constantly monitored. And I think that's one of the biggest, biggest benefits.
It's a very important point. And thank you for raising it, because one of the things as buyers and as consumers and clients that we need to remember is whose job is it to check certain things, and how do you figure out whose responsibility certain things sit with? And at times, it's actually your responsibility as the client to check that certain things have been met. Traditionally, in the commercial industry, or if you're hiring a project manager or an architect or a designer to be your superintendent, they would be responsible for checking that the building is built as per all the specifications. And different people have different roles in the industry. So the building surveyor has a compliance role, definitely, but it's not looking at a whole range of things. They're looking at the compliancy, mandatory compliancies that are set down by the Building Code of Australia. So, Simone, thank you so much for being with us today. What a fascinating discussion around sustainability in general, but also passive house. And if you are thinking about designing or want to design a passive house for yourself, make sure it's right from the inception, and you want to make sure that you get the team around you that is suitably qualified to be able to design your passive house, but also execute the building of a passive house as well. And that goes in all respects. If you're thinking about incorporating sustainable measures, make sure you're working with a documenter or a draftsperson or an architect who can bring those ideas to life for you in the way that you see them and what's real to your vision. Thanks so much.
Thanks a lot for having me.
Thanks for listening to Building with Buildher. We'd love for you to spread the word.
For show notes, links and downloads and other awesome resources and freebies, head to buildhercollective.com.au. And don't forget, that's Buildher with an H-E-R.
And if you enjoyed this episode, it would mean so much to both of us if you could take a minute or two to leave a review.
And don't forget to subscribe so you can listen next time as we talk all things building and women making their mark in the building industry.